A very warm welcome to all of you to Ayurvedic Healing and Beyond podcast, and this is your host Dr. Vignesh Devraj. In today's episode, I am sharing one of the very recent lectures I gave to a group of guests at Sitaram Beach Retreat. The topic is the secrets of being healthy. Many patients, while visiting Sitaram, they ask, "Doctor, how do I sustain the health benefits I gained here while doing the Panchakarma and Ayurvedic treatments? And while I am in Sitaram, it's so easy to live healthy, but could you please guide us how to continue this when I go back home to my family, to my friends, to my work culture, and to all the restaurants and the triggers that I'm going to be exposed?" So here I explain what is the mindset of a healthy person and a few basics that will help you keep healthy. Actually, there are no secrets. It's just about having a particular mindset which will keep you healthy. Hope you will enjoy the episode. As it's a live recording, apologies for the background disturbances, but we have done the best to minimize the noise background. If you would like to know more about my work, please check the show notes of the podcast or visit www.sitaramretreat.com. If I spell it, SITARAMRETREAT.com. I hope you enjoy this podcast, and now we go over to the lecture. Today we'll talk about the secrets of being healthy. Actually, there are no secrets, it's very open truth. But still, the moment we put the word secret, you know, we have the curiosity. Oh my God, I want to know what it is. By the way, I'm Dr. Vignesh. Some of you who don't know me, I'm also an Ayurvedic doctor, founder of this place. So every few days we have this afternoon interaction to give you an idea what we do in Sitaram, and also to bring more awareness about what it means to be healthy and how to live healthy. And also, some of you are, you know, might have gone for different Ayurveda treatments to many other places, and you're coming with a lot of background memories. You know, I did it there, but why is it different here? So we are just trying to integrate you into this place. And some of you might be thinking, oh, I don't want to do this treatment. How will I do this treatment? You make me throw up, you make me clean my stomach, you're not giving my cappuccino, I don't have my prosecco in the night. All these things are not there. How do you expect me to survive 2-3 weeks here? So we make you comfortable in spite of that. You know, people complain it's too hot, but still we go to sauna. You know, people complain it's too cold and they go for ice cold showers and dip inside that. So it's just the intention that we have, you know, that's where the health comes. Now in Ayurveda, the word for health is called swastha. It's a Sanskrit word. Swastha, it's a two phonetical sounds, swa, stha. The word swa means my purest self. Like the way I am created by Mother Nature or intelligence or whatever the source energy, the way it has created me, that is what is called as swa. And stha means connected or grounded or embraced. So the more I am connected with my true original self, I am healthy. The more I am disconnected, I am having dis-ease, or my ease of flow or living is not so easy. That's why it's called dis-ease. It's not easy anymore. You know, I find it so much of resistance. It's like driving with a handbrake on. You're not able to move so easily. Now, when it comes to connecting back to yourself, we just have to avoid whatever is disconnecting us today. Now, people say, how do I detox? You know, the number one thumb rule to enhance your detox is you just stop retoxing yourself. You stop putting the poison inside you, and then the body has the most efficient detoxing organs, you know, the liver, the kidneys, the lymphatic system, the skin. It is every moment we are eliminating a lot of toxins. You know, every split second, billions of cells in our body are dying and the new cells are being formed. And that is why in Ayurveda, the word for human body in Sanskrit also, it is called Sharira. Now, Sharira, if you look at the dictionary, it will say a living body. But if you go to the etymology is like, you know, how the words are being formed. If you look at the etymology, it is that which dies every moment. So do you agree we are dying every moment? Some people get scared, some people think, how is that possible? It's a continuous statement, you know, we are dying every moment. Now, when we say we are dying every moment, it also means we are being born every moment, right? Only when something goes away, you have space for something new to come. Do you agree with that? Like, if something is always there, there is no space for something new. Like, there was this documentary by in Netflix by Marie Kondo. You know, she helps you declutter your home. So, if you keep on holding on to the stuff, there is no space for new things to come. And detox is what? It's a kind of decluttering your things that you don't need anymore. And we are holding on to it and the body finds it as an excess baggage. At one point of time, we found more and more people dying because of malnourishment. Malnourishment means no lack of food, lack of nutrients, lack of water. At one point of time, few decades or even a century ago, we heard people died because they didn't have food. Do you agree with that? Today, do you hear people dying of food? Yes, we do read in newspapers. We do read in some parts where the quality of life is very poor. The access to potable water or healthy food is very difficult. Still, people are dying. But let's say in your network, do you hear people dying because they didn't have food? Like famine happened and they didn't die. I mean, and they died because of that. Today, more and more people are dying, not because of malnourishment. It is because of overconsumption. Does that make sense? More and more people are dying because of overconsumption. Okay, what are the diseases of overconsumption? Obesity, high cholesterol, high levels of uric acid, diabetes, HbA1c levels are too high. Now, what is malnourishment? Malnourishment, it can also mean anemia. I am having water deficiency. My electrolytes are imbalanced. And also, vitamin deficiency can also fall under malnourishment. Some people could have vitamin B12 deficiency and they could have anxiety because of that. Vitamin B12 deficiency can lead to a lot of other nervous system issues. Like in Ayurveda, we call it Vata problems. So, today we are overfed and undernourished. That is the kind of lifestyle that we have designed. Now, this is the current state that we have designed. Even though, you know, when you look at, when you read history, food revolution and all the technologies that has happened, we trained ourselves to survive from these famine and scarcity. But let's look at the other side. You know, our body, especially our brain, it was designed about 200,000 years ago. Like before that, there was another brain, but then it got updated. Like, you know, our software gets updated every September, but unfortunately, our brain software gets updated maybe few millennials or thousands of years later. So, we are still using the software which the caveman used. So, at that time when our brain was designed, we were designed for three things. One is we were designed to survive scarcity, to live in the most difficult, challenging, excruciating, ruthless nature surrounding us, to survive that kind of environment. That is how our body is designed for. We are not actually designed for so much of comfort. But of course, we love comfort. But when our body was designed, the current edition that we all are living, this edition was designed for a lot of scarcity and a lot of challenges and a lot of discomfort. That is the rule number one. Second rule, we were also designed to consume as much sweet, salt and fat. Do you understand? Like, whenever you get access to something sweet, salt and fat, you have a genetic imprint that I need to as much as possible. Because at that point of time, these things were very scarce. Let's say you want to eat something sweet, you know, you have to climb certain things. And even though there are fruits available, but it's very scarce, it's seasonal. It's not available throughout the year and you can't just press a button in your phone and it comes to your home. We have to do a lot of hard work to earn something really good. And when you get the good food, you don't know when the next supply is going to be. So you are trained to eat whenever you want. So this is how we were actually designed. And the third thing, when you over consume, you tend to perish. This is the other side of the story. And that is why we are transiting from a species that suffered a lot of malnourishment problem to a species that is learning to deal with abundance problems. And in Ayurveda, few centuries ago, it was told treating diseases of malnourishment is quite easier compared to treating diseases of overconsumption. Do you know why? One is you have to remove a lot of toxins. There are various reasons. One is definitely, once it goes inside, it's very difficult to eliminate. But if it is low, yes. To a great extent, you know, something is lacking, I just need to top up. It's much easier. But let's say my uric acid goes up or my cholesterol level goes up, I can't just eliminate it like that. So body has a specific system to eliminate because it needs to protect. But it's a, you know, contradicting imprint that we have in our body. On one hand, we are designed to consume as much as we want, but if we go overboard, it's going to kill us. So this is the game that we have to play in the 21st century. And the secret, or the not so secret, the rule for having a healthy lifestyle in the 21st century is your ability to say no to overconsumption. The more you're able to say no to overconsumption, that will definitely define your longevity. Now, definitely, see, when I talk about this, let's say I'm having a conversation with an allopathic doctor. You know, they always claim it is because of the allopathic medicine we have such fantastic longevity. That is absolutely true, and it is only after the post antibiotic invention that our longevity has increased. At one point of time, 30 or 40 years, if you made it, it's a big history. And many people died of infections, and if you have a bug, and you could die of electrolyte imbalance. And today you give them an antibiotic and you are able to come out of it. And there is also a statement, today we have managed to enhance the longevity, but this longevity has just resulted in more hospital bills. There is a difference between living long and living with vitality. And the allopathic system, like, you know, it was designed during this time, when we had a lot of malnourishment problems. So at that point of time, when people were dying, from day one, when they go to a medical school, they are taught, how can I avoid death? How can I stop this person from dying? You know, you can keep a person in the ventilator, but the quality of life, the quality of your emotions, the way you can interact with your surroundings, that's a complete different brain work to deal with. So the vitality, living with vitality and surviving and just being alive, it's a two different school of thought. Do you agree with that? Now, we don't have so much of problems of scarcity, we have problems of abundance. And because, as I told you, we are designed to eat as much sweet, salt and fat, the food industry has taken complete control over our nervous system. They have completely under their buttons. You know, if you want to create a addictive junk food, these are the three recipes: sweet, salty and fatty. I mean, there are good fat and bad fat. The processed food that we eat is not so healthy fat. This is what goes and blocks our arteries and stuff. Now, when people ask, so when I come to Sitaram, I feel so good. I don't have the cravings for alcohol, or I don't have the cravings for even meat. I feel so good, I don't even feel like smoking here. Some people do feel that need to smoke, but they say that I don't have these needs. Why is it that I don't have these needs? But the moment I go back, I have that. You know the Pavlov's dog theory? It's one of the most groundbreaking studies that we have had. The Russian scientist Ivan Pavlov, he did a study on ringing the bell, food and the dog. Ringing the bell, he kept the food and the dog is there. The third time only the bell rang, there is no food, but the dog starts salivating. These food industries, alcohol or cigarettes or whatever, all the unhealthy stuff which will not kill you immediately but which will keep you hooked up to them. They have made us this Pavlovian dog. We have completely at their mercy and they know when to keep ringing that bell. And we are just completely at their mercy unless we consciously bulletproof or put us on this flight mode from these triggers. Now, what makes Sitaram? Because we don't have these triggers. You know, the moment you come, you have to, it's quite boring here actually. In the evening, there is no entertainment, there is no Netflix. I mean, some people do use the Wi-Fi and do that, but you don't see a bar here, you don't see a buffet where there's so much of food. In the food portion, the first few days, people think, oh my God, this is so much, this is so little, how am I going to survive? But then later you realize, this is enough for me. And the logic that we need to eat more so that I'll have more energy is a flawed thinking. You know, your body adapts. If you tend to eat little and nutritious and wholesome food, your body will tend to take the energy from that. But if you overeat, maybe your gastronomic needs are met, but you feel tired. You know, when you ask people, what is the source of energy? Can you tell me what's the source of energy? What makes a person energetic? There are many things. Breath. Ability to burn the calories. I mean, yes, of course, if you don't breathe for 3 minutes, you are brain dead. See, there are many things. Movement, breath, ability to burn calories. I mean, we have so many reasons. On one hand, people say it's food. Sometimes people say they could sit lazy and no energy and somebody goes and gives them a wonderful news. There is no intervention of Red Bull or any kind of thing, but instantly they get up and a lot of energy happens. So a lot happens with your emotions as well. Now the idea that I need more food for energy, it's a debatable concept because many people actually feel tired after they eat. They feel grumpy and heavy and they want to lie down because the food makes them so heavy. So the idea that food actually makes you energetic, we need to reassess. It is healthy, nutritious food combined with your ability to process it and metabolize it. That is what makes you, your energy levels go up. But it's not just the food and it is not just your metabolism. It's both hand in hand together. Now, we will discuss, you know, when you spend your 2 weeks or even 1 week or even 3 weeks, you will feel quite energetic. So, what do I do when I go back? Now, the first thing, we have something called as identity. Now, when I talk about identity, we all have a kind of identity. Like some people say, I want to be known as a person who is intelligent. Some people say, I'm a family man. My family is my most important thing. For some people, work is worship. I am someone who surrenders to my work and my career. Some people say, oh, money is the most important thing I want to grow in my career. Like this, we all have different priorities in life. Priorities is what? If work is my priority, then my decisions of my life will depend on my work. Do you agree with that? Like if work is my priority over family, family comes second, work comes first. Then let's say you have an important deadline. At the same time, your family tells you there is an important event and it's a beautiful celebration, we have to say, which one will you give priority? Naturally, you will say work. But if it's the other way around, if family is your priority and work is not the important thing, you will tell your boss, maybe once you will listen to him, second time you will start looking for a new job that will meet your family needs. Is that clear? So your priority is what makes you decide and what makes you say no and yes to certain things. So we have to make health as our priority, which means I want to be known as a person who is healthy and fit and full of vitality. We have to bring in that kind of an identity. Now, when I say this to people, people think, oh my God, that means I have to give up a lot of wonderful pleasures and beautiful things of my life. Now, let's just talk about some of our needs. You know, we have work, we have family, we have fun, we have creativity. Now, do you think if you make health as your priority, you cannot have any of these? Exactly. Only these things will appreciate. Now, let's say you don't have health at all. Is this of any use? No matter how much money you have. See, you can buy a lot of things. You can have a lot of money to have the access to the best doctors, the best facilities. But one thing, you can never buy it. That is your health. You cannot buy it. But yes, you can choose to buy healthy food. You can choose to come to a place like here. You can choose to go for a gym workout or a yoga. You can choose to say no to unhealthy stuff. But you cannot just buy it on a counter. You have to live it and earn it. And that's the beauty of health. It's not just how much you have. It's not just how influential you are. It's your connection with yourself and your self-respect that you have. So when you respect yourself, what happens? You say no to things that are toxing you. You say no to things that are toxic, be it food, be it chemicals, be it relationship, be it environments. You say no to this job, you say no to this relationship, you say no to this connection, and you say no to this food or any kind of abuse. Because it's a holistic thing, it just doesn't come in one or two things. It's a combined work. So, when you keep health as your priority, let's say what happens? Your work will improve because you will think better. You know, the most expensive job is to think. And in order to think, you need good energy and you need good emotional reserve. See, when your energy is low, a small problem can become a huge issue. But when your energy is very good, even if it's a big problem, I can handle it. You know, you might see, oh, I'm in a very low energy, don't come with me, the small things, it could trigger you in a very bad way. So it's always important to keep your health and your energy at its best. So which means we have to redesign our life. When people say, no, I have to go for evening parties, that's a part of my job. You will see a lot of people still going and socializing, but without indulging too much. You will see both the ends. It's just the way we tell the story to ourselves. So the foundation of all the secrets that I'm going to tell next, the first thing is we have to keep our identity. I want to be known as a person who is very health conscious, who is quite fit, who is quite full of vitality. And I choose only habits that aligns with this priority. So when I keep this as the priority, tomorrow somebody comes and tells you, you know, you have a job promotion, but you'll have to work late night hours and you have to sell your soul but you will get lots and lots of money. But if it does not align with this, you say no to it. And you look for opportunities where it aligns with this. That is clear. So this is very, once you do this, then your muscle to say no will become powerful. Once this is not there, then whatever it is, it will just drag you around. And you are completely at the mercy. If you are in a good surrounding, you are able to do that. But if not, you fall prey to that. See, some people say longevity has a lot to do with genetics. But studies in Denmark, it shows only 20% of your genetics has an influence on your longevity. It's what you choose every single day that determines your longevity. I mean, I'm not just talking about how long you live. We are talking about living with vitality. So, this is the first step. Make health as my identity, and I am known to be a person who is healthy, and I take pride in saying no to things that are unhealthy. That mentality has to sink into yourself. That is my new DNA, that is my new thinking, and that is my new identity. So once this is there, then it becomes a walk in the park. Now that I told about the park, you see this garden. It's not that people come here once in a year, twice a week and then solve it and go back. They work every day. You know, you see them watering and different seasons. If it is summer, we have to water more. We start watering at 6:30 in the morning before the sun rises. During rainy times, we have to make sure there is no water clogging so that it gets enough air and it can breathe. And whenever there is weed, we have to remove it and make sure that this doesn't happen. Maybe in the beginning, this was a lot of work. But as we go, the maintenance becomes easier and easier. But in the beginning, if this was like a, you know, unknown or untouched garden, there would be a lot of unhealthy things. But then once you get into that groove, once you set it up, then it's a easy thing to maintain. So usually, let's say you are overweight, or let's say you are suffering with some stress-induced disorder, or any, let's even call it autoimmune condition, or hypothyroidism, or skin rashes, or allergies. A lot of it has to do with your lifestyle. See, being an Ayurvedic doctor, I tell myself as I represent myself as the doctor for the leftover patients. Leftover patients of the allopathic medicine, they tried everything and now they are coming and seeing something can happen. So if somebody comes to me, let's say they are having psoriatic arthritis, they have a lot of psoriasis, and when that is not attended well in a holistic way, that can lead to arthritic conditions later on. This will also lead to impact with their joints and pain and other things. So I'll go through their daily lifestyle. Of course, medicines will help about 20 to 30 or even up to 40%, including the cleansing that we do. But the rest is all about the lifestyle. So if I understand, they drink a lot of milk, they drink a lot of cheese, if they take a lot of alcohol, which is high on sugar, let's say I spend 45 minutes or 1 hour with them, 5 minutes I spend on prescribing the medications and the diet and things. The rest of the 55 minutes I spend them brainwashing them why these things are bad and why you should come out of it. And that is how, that is where the real healing happens. You know, people say you can only take the horse to the pond, you cannot make it drink, but we can make the horse thirsty. And once you make the horse thirsty, we don't have to do the work, it will drink. And in fact, this session is, we are making you thirsty of how to be healthy. So there are few things in today's food consumption that are extremely not good for us. In Ayurveda, we have this term called as Ama. Ama means that which is not me, anything that which is sticky in nature. Sticky, you know what it means? Sticky. So what are the sticky stuff that we have in the food that we consume? The sticky stuff that we consume. Sugar, yes. When you add sugar with water, what do you get? Glue. It's a sticky stuff. Some people say Coca-Cola. And some people ask me, what about Diet Coke? It's less on sugar. No, it is another scam. It has aspartame, which is calorifically it's low, but still it is sweet. But because your nervous system does not understand the difference between calorie and the taste, you know, the taste is the way the body tries to understand the calorific value. And when you try to trick it, your body still feels it is sweet, so there is high on calories, and your body will behave in a way that it is there. But in the end, you are having the same problems in a different way. So, sugar, milk, you know, gluten. You see the word gluten, glue. And processed food. Now, when you consume things that have a lot of this, your bodies tend to have to invest a lot more energy to eliminate. See, when I go with my mother to buy some cookeries for the kitchen, she always asks for non-sticky heating pan. Now, why is there a demand for non-sticky heating pan? It's much easier to wash. So when you eat food or when you cook something, after you cook, if you have to invest a lot of energy in cleaning that dish, imagine your body also has to invest a lot of energy in cleaning it up. That is clear. So always try to have food that are not so sticky. And what makes things that are sticky when you add more mayonnaise, when you add more butter, when you add more fried food? Okay, now there is a question, what about ghee? See, we need fat, and there are two types of fat. In a layman's language, we call it sticky fat and non-sticky fat. Non-sticky fat, ghee is a non-sticky fat, olive oil, sesame oil, coconut oil, these are non-sticky fat. But when you process it and fry it over a long period of time, then it becomes sticky. That stickiness, it goes and blocks different parts of your body, and the body has to invest a lot of its energy to eliminate it. So that is where, when we want to have energy to do our daily course, but our body's energy is invested in cleaning it. That's why people say, I feel tired after eating. After you eat food, it takes a lot of energy to invest in processing it. So many scientists who understood longevity and who did a lot of research on longevity, they all come to one thing: minimalism in your consumption. Like, when I say minimalism in your consumption, in Ayurveda we have this concept. Let's say this is your volume of food you can consume in your gut. Let's say there are four parts. This is for solids, liquid, and the half for free space. So which is, 1/4 is for the solids, another for the enzymes and the liquids that you consume, and the rest is for free. That is, you allow space for the digestion to happen. This was mentioned in Ayurvedic textbooks. So in today's world, how do you understand if you can, am I eating the right portion? One is, the moment you feel I can eat one more meal, at that time you stop it. That ability to say no, I can have one more portion, but you say no to it. Then you need to ask yourself, am I eating for my gastronomic pleasure or am I eating for my energy? That's a different thing. See, the difference between craving and hunger. Craving is always on one particular item. Now people say, I crave for a Toblerone, I crave for this pizza. People don't say, oh, I crave for broccoli, oh, I crave for this particular kind of nutritious salad. You know, they don't crave for it because the energy comes from there. Craving is a trained pattern that makes you have this kind of an entertainment. Craving is a way you meet your need to come out of boredom. Whereas hunger is a way that your body is needing healthy, nutritious meal. That is what you're trying to have. So, one thing that you will see here in Sitaram, we always give you a huge portion. I mean, the portion control is very strong here. We give you in plates, we give you in this much in cups. And that is why we don't have a buffet, because once you keep a buffet here, it is a contradicting factor to what we do here. On here you clean and there you go and retox. In fact, it should work in complementing pattern. So that is why we are feeding. See, we don't believe in starving, because if you starve, the moment you leave here and if you are taking an international flight, you will finish the buffet in that lounge, and starting from everything else that goes. So it is very important we don't put our body to a starvation point, but little bit of putting the body through, you know, minimalism. That is what we are trying to do. We are avoiding the things that will create more problems. Rather, we are just feeding on the right things. So when we go through this period, many people will have withdrawal symptoms. Like, that's why first few days people complain, oh, I feel headache, maybe because I didn't have coffee. Some people say, I'm not able to sleep well, maybe I don't have that third glass of wine. Because that's just like the Pavlovian dog. We are resetting your nervous system, and then it makes you easier to follow that. Now, there is a problem with our nervous system. In fact, that is a coping mechanism. Like in Ayurveda, we have this word called as satmya. Satmya means what is wholesome for me. Now, let's say I am having low sugar levels in my body and my energy dips. Definitely, I need some glucose. And if some people have, you know, they fall down. And the moment you give them a candy or glucose or you put them IV or electrolytes, they get up. But I tend to eat a little more sugar. Second day, I eat little more sugar and then I appreciate that taste. The third day, what I had in the first 2 days will not be enough because I will get desensitized. Do you understand? Desensitized. Especially the one of the best example is alcohol. Let's say you're drinking for the first time, you drink one glass and you're knocked out. Second day, third day, you need more and more to feel that sense of high. And then after 20 minutes, you have to drink again to get that, to maintain that highness. That's what is called as okasatmia. Okasatmia means your body normalizes that which is unhealthy for you. It's your body's ability to hold on to things that are stressful for you. So when you keep consuming things that are unhealthy, body has a threshold to tolerate. Now, when you see somebody who is sick, but at the same time he is functioning, it's just that their threshold levels have been heightened, and a time comes, like the frog in that boiling water, that there is no going back. So usually people become conscious, I want to bring down this threshold level, and that changes. And that is what happens when you do a panchakarma. We are resetting your ability to tolerate high levels of toxicity, be it with your mind, be it with the food, be it with your surroundings. So when we resensitize it, when we, you know, reset it, what happens? Little food is enough for you. You don't need so much of unhealthy stuff. And your energy, you find it in small, small things. So when you go back, cut down on your heavy food. Eliminate things that are heavy. And if you tend to eat a lot of sugar sweetened beverages or sweetened food, bring it down as minimalistic as possible. Take pride in not eating much. But when you eat, enjoy it. It's not about I'm depriving myself. Don't tell yourself depriving. The moment you tell your mind I'm depriving, you'll have a rebound. But instead, this is what I love to enjoy and I'm done with it. Maybe in the beginning it's difficult. Okay, I have a sweet tooth. So one thing that is very important for me, whenever people give me chocolates, I distribute it here because if it goes home, the whole thing will go into me. It's my, knowing myself, this is how, but there are people who have excellent willpower. Now I don't need it because they are trained, I don't need so much of sugar, but they might love salty food or they are just indulgent in other things. So knowing where is your weakness, it's very important to stop exposing to the triggers. Do you understand? Exposing to the triggers. Like there was a study done, what makes people healthy? Is it the people with willpower who are healthy or people without willpower? And they were trying to figure out. And the idea of this study was, is willpower common to all of us? And what they figured out, willpower is actually the same with all of us. However, people with fantastic willpower, they just avoid getting exposed to areas where they need to use it. Does that make sense? Like if I have a sweet tooth, I avoid going to the desert area where they sell this. If I have issues with salty food, then it's very important that I keep the salt away. And then a time will come, I don't need that. I learned myself to have the energy without it, so I don't need to deal with it. Then your willpower muscle is stronger. So we have to, starting with just with the food, minimize in your consumption and bring portion control. And if you are cooking at home, cook less. See, nobody died because they ate less. And there's also saying, if you love to eat, eat little so you live long enough, you can eat a lot. So that's another way of looking at it. So this is the first rule. Now coming to what kind of food I should eat, see there are ample studies non-vegetarian is good, there are ample studies vegetarian is good, there are ample studies vegetarian is bad, ample studies non-vegetarian is also bad. So it all depends on how you feel, how you interact with your, how you feel after you eat the food. If you feel low after you eat, that food is not the best for you. Either you ate too much or that food is not working for you. But after you eat that, you feel bloated, again it is not good for you. But after you eat that, you feel very good, you feel energetic, that food is right for you. And there is no one size fits for all. Like for example, I grew up in South India and we have a South Indian vegetarian dish. And this is what I have been brought up with. And I have connected like the Pavlov's dog, this food means home and security and I feel at home. Once I went to Europe and I had to eat bread, which is not my normal food. Then I still remember I took a train for €70, and then ate the South Indian food in one restaurant, and I had to wait, and I was the first person to enter there because that food was so important for me. Whether that food was healthy, good, that's a different thing. There is an emotion that is attached to it. But one thing that you have to look at it, if it is too oily, if it is too sticky, and after you eat the food, if you feel heavy, definitely you have to revise what you're consuming. And that is one food that you will find here. You know, talk to the chef, and we are also giving you the recipes if you want, and we are also coming out with the cookbook. This is a way you connect with how to eat healthy. And most of the restaurants that are available and serving, they have no idea what is health. And they are least concerned about your health. Of course, they are concerned about, did you enjoy the food? They don't ask, how do you feel after the food? And will you come back, because it makes you addictive, so you come back and pay more. So this is one area, your relationship with food is an important criteria for your longevity. Now, the other aspect, we all have to move. We are designed to move. We are not designed to stay in one place. We all are designed to move, run, climb. This is how we are actually designed. So if we don't move enough, it's going to create problems. But at the same time, I'm not saying tomorrow onwards go and train for Olympics. It's every day we have to raise our heart rate. When we raise our heart rate, see, heart is a muscle. And what is the rule for the muscle? If you use it, you make it better. If you don't use it, it loses its flaccidity. And muscle is the organ that decides your longevity. Now, there are schools of thought that thinks the reason why we have brain is so that we have control over our muscles. And when you have muscles, you are able to run. I'm not saying go and get into bodybuilding and be like Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's completely contrary. The idea is we need to have good muscles. And that muscles come from little bit of strength training, little bit of good yoga, little bit of movement, increasing your heart rate. This plays such an important role. So make yoga or a gym or an aerobic exercise. It's a part, just like you take shower, you brush your teeth. This has to become part of your daily lifestyle. And that is why in Dinacharya in Ayurveda, your rituals for daily longevity, daily habits that gives you longevity, exercise is one of the most important thing. And it talks about, do exercise to half of your strength. If you overdo it, then it can backfire. People get injured. How to know I am overdoing it, and how to know I'm doing it the right way? After the exercise, if you feel tired and if you don't have the energy to continue the next thing, you're overdoing it. Whereas after the exercise, oh, I feel so good. I feel energetic. At the same time, there is a little bit of calorie burnt. Then that is a good exercise. Could it be yoga? It could be workout. And especially if you come from a cold country and you don't sweat a lot, or if you sit in the office with air conditioners throughout, get into a habit of sweating either through exercise or visiting a sauna. It's very important. And also women in their menopause, when they complain, I'm having hot flashes and heat waves, visiting steam, you know, you don't have to go to that Finnish sauna which heats you up at 90 degrees. Going at 60 to or even 40 to 50 degrees. That is also a fantastic thing, because when you go to sauna, what happens? You sweat. And what happens when you sweat? You're activating your lymphatic drainage. And what happens when you activate your lymphatic drainage? You're purifying your blood. When your blood is purified, you know, everything in your body is also getting better. You know, most of the tests, just by testing your blood, a lot of things can be changed. So, just by focusing on these things, and in Ayurveda, there is a powerful therapy for high vata. When your vata goes up, means your nervous system is out of control. The most powerful therapy for high vata is having routine. Routine means the time I go to sleep, the time I get up, and the time I eat, and the time I exercise, it is structured. When I do this, what happens? My body thinks I am safe. But when I don't have a routine, no matter how safe your surrounding is, no matter how fantastic healthy food access you have, your body still doesn't believe that. Because timing has an important role in our body to make us feel safe. Like, you know, we had a patient, couple come for fertility. They say, I eat healthy and I live in a very healthy environment. I also work out. But why am I finding it difficult to conceive? And my blood reports, yes, little bit of hormonal fluctuations are there. So I just asked this person, have you seen when you go to some of the areas where there are some slums? You will see women walking with two children on their hands. They may not be living in the best sanitization possible. They may not have the access to the best food. But you will see they have a routine. There is not much entertainment at night. They go to sleep, they wake up. Their needs are quite limited, but they have a routine in their life. So once you have routine, the body feels fertility is a luxury. So once the body feels safe, now I have the energy and the ability to reproduce. So when the routine is lost, body's vitality also comes low. So definitely if you live where you are a pilot or an air hostess, yes, after you retire, you have to get back. But try to minimize red eye flights. Take time to recover properly. Make sure you are spending enough time to hydrate yourself and eliminate all the unhealthy stuff. See, we need a balance. If you do something unhealthy, we need to make sure we are balancing it out in the proper way. And as long as that balancing is fantastic, see, living healthy completely is also a form of unhealthiness. It's not like you should not indulge in unhealthy stuff. You need a balance. It should be like a pendulum. You should swing. Let's say I had an all-nighter, but I make sure that doesn't happen all throughout. I also need to, because your body also needs to go through some stress. That's why you know that you are healthy. That's why you know that you are alive. So this tendency to get into stress and that recovery mode, this is what happens. Either we are completely in the stress mode or completely in the health mode. This is not the ideal way. We have to keep swinging. And that's how the life is. Life is about that duality. You know, you have summer followed with rain, with winter, you have day and you have night. That's how the nature has designed that polarity. You have negative and positive. We don't judge what is right, what is, as long as that wave is balanced, is maintained, that is where the life is. And that is what we call vibrate, you know, it keeps changing. But we need to keep that change in a proper manner. So any questions so far? I mean, that's why it's not a big secret, it's quite normal. Sleep on time, eat on time, eat limited, eat nutritious, make sure exercise is a part of your thing. But most importantly, make your identity, I am a healthy person. And once in a while, 2-3 months, take time off to do retreats like this. You know, this Panchakarma, it's a fantastic therapy. And it's not just about detoxing the body, it's also about taking time off from your daily course. You know, you're saying goodbye to the people that you are constantly dealing with. You know, it gives you time to think, what is it that I really want? And this grounding is so important for us. So, I think it's information overload. You can also listen to this in the next week's podcast that will be repeated. And please go through that health passport that we give you. You have all the descriptions about what we write. This will help you. Okay, then, if you don't have questions, see you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Ayurvedic Healing and Beyond. If you loved and enjoyed this podcast, please do subscribe, share, and review us. This helps to spread our mission of guiding humanity to becoming their healthiest self and also giving the right resources for holistic healing. If you wish to know more about my work, please do visit www.vigneshdevraj.com. And if you are interested in doing an Ayurveda treatment or authentic Panchakarma therapy, please log on to www.sitaramretreat.com.